And good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, we begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. And, of course, you can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. And we're joined today by our own Alan Chartok and Libby Post, a commentator and activist. And nice to have you both here. Welcome back from the weekend. Anything exciting to relate on a personal level?
I got all my culture in one week.
What did you do?
Friday night we went to Tanglewood. Saturday night we went to SPAC.
So you say all that's it for
that's
the year?
It, that's it. I'm
just
done.
Tanglewood.
Tanglewood was Michael Feinstein and the Boston
Pops.
And then we saw the Philadelphia Orchestra, and they did the Rite of Spring by Stravinsky.
Oh, lovely.
Some other nice stuff.
So you're set for the year. Now
I am done now.
It's Three Stooges festivals and things like that after the good.
Well, if you like Stravinsky, I believe, am I wrong about this, that the Martha Graham people will be at, Jacob's Pillow doing the Stravinsky.
Well, that should be interesting.
I just thought I'd mention that. I'm probably all wrong.
Libby's had her quota now. You really don't need to.
Modern dance isn't
she's
my
all
thing,
set.
But that's
it
okay.
is, and I love modern dance.
And I assume you spent your weekend culturally tuning up your banjo?
We had a wonderful time. We had a wonderful meal. We went out with one of our Sarah's colleagues from the College of New Jersey.
Oh,
and
lovely.
Her son. Everything was very nice. And then yesterday we had some wonderful people for a brunch. You know, that's the way the Chartoks live.
That's the way you roll. Well, into the news today we go. And, if you read the New York Times, none of the papers in New York are all that fond of Elliot Spitzer. So there was this, I think it was yesterday, headline in the New York Times. David Chen wrote this. Stringer gets endorsements of three city newspapers. All three, the Daily News, the Post, and the New York Times, all threw their support to Scott Stringer. And the newspapers, quoting here, denounced Mr. Spitzer, former governor, for being a cheat and a liar. That was the Daily News, about the prostitution scandal that led to his resignation and for turning in a dismal performance as governor. That's the Times editorial board. And for being interested only in feeding his insatiable ego. That's the New York Post. Now,
POST.
That's right.
Thank you.
And
no relation.
Stringer is trailing by as much as 19 points in the polls.
Yeah.
So, Alan, let's get your political take on this to start off here.
Well, first of all, I think they're scared to death.
Who?
Before I even go there, I want to say something. Everybody knows it, but Elliot Spitzer has been very good to the station. He is a resident of the Hudson Valley, and he's been very generous. He also, by the way, believes that public radio should get no money from the federal government.
Right.
And he thinks that politicians, when they get their hands on give money, they believe it's their own money, public money, and then they pull the strings, and they say, you do this or else. And we see this all the time.
Do you agree with that?
What?
With what he says about
I
that?
I think there is a very appealing part of that argument.
Yeah.
Very appealing part of that argument. On the other hand, we need the money.
Right.
But yes, I think you always have to be prepared for them to take it away and to stick it in their eye. However, let's go back to the thing.
Now, who's scared? You said that they're scared.
I think the group is scared. Who are they?
Yeah.
Well, when Elliot Spitzer was Attorney General, unlike anybody before or after him, he went after the street. Who have been... Many of the players on the street have been playing it badly, and Spitzer held them accountable, and I think New Yorkers admire that about him. And they're thinking in their heads, you put this guy in, and you might get something really interesting. He'll go and he'll do it again, and we'll see some real change. If you put the other guy in, who's a perfectly nice man, what you'll find is that the group, we call some the Republicans, we call some the Democrats, we call them the Republicrats sometimes, but they gather together because we know who gives them the money to run for office and the rest of it. Some of these very characters who Spitzer went after with everything that he had at his disposal. So now they're worried because they read that poll and they say, oh my God, 19 points, we got to head this off at the pass. So now you have all three newspapers on the same day coming out and blasting Spitzer, and I think it's an interesting concept that they all then start writing newspaper articles about the fact that all three newspapers did it. They're scared, let's face it. And so when you keep saying, who are they?
Yeah, I mean, are they? Are you saying that the editorial boards are now in league with all Wall Street and you know, those have, who have been vilified in the press?
Well, the publishers are.
Yeah?
No, I'm not. The publishers are. No.
Wait a second. Can you ask that question one more time? Just wait a second.
Why is that?
No, I want you to ask it one
more
time.
Well, are you suggesting that the editorial boards of these three papers are in league then with the Wall Street, those who have been vilified as baddies by those perhaps left of center?
Yes.
Libby?
Well, we all know that the publishers play a role in the editorial boards. And the publishers are the ones who look at the bottom line. And they are connected, especially down there, with Wall Street. So there might be some of that going on as well. But I also think in the more bizarre part of this whole thing, you know, everyone wanted to give Wiener a second chance with his sex thing, and that didn't work. Now, Elliot has kept on sort of the straight and narrow. He hasn't gone back to the girls.
That we know of.
So that, you know, this could be New Yorker's opportunity to give somebody that second chance that they like to do. So
do you think he benefited then, Libby, from Wiener entering the mayoral race?
Well, I think he benefited from Wiener not being able to stop doing what he's doing, what he likes to do. You know,
but
I think
it is interesting because I love this, is that Wiener, who they didn't like, the group didn't like, he's gone. Mm-hmm. He's not an embarrassment anymore. He's gone.
He's out.
So then they move one.
Now, I went to Maine. Did he bail out of the race?
Who?
No.
I've been gone for a week.
No, I said he wouldn't bail out, and he hasn't.
Okay, so he's just not viable
at this
point.
He's getting, 10%.
I thought I might have missed something. All right.
Yeah. No, you didn't miss anything, as usual. So, from where I'm sitting, New Yorkers are going to have to make a decision. Do we want to listen to these newspapers and telling us what to do and, you know, ganging up? New Yorkers don't like ganging up. And this is what's going on here. They're ganging up on them. As my mother used to say, don't gang up.
Is this also, do you think, panel, by the way, we're joined by Libby Post and Alan Shartok this morning. This is the roundtable, 20 minutes after 9 o'clock. Do you think now Stringer, who has strong, vast support of labor,
and we're talking about mayor of New York. Yeah, we're talking about this. I'm sorry.
I'm going back to Stringer.
No, we're talking about control.
Stringer Spitzer.
We're talking about control. Right. Remember what happened to Stringer? He was term limited as the Manhattan Borough president.
Right.
See, so if you're a professional politician and you're term limited,
you got to
go somewhere else. So he thought this was an easy one.
Well, okay. My question for you is this.
And it was.
New York City, for a long time, for ages, strong labor town. You know, Stringer has big support of labor, and yet trailing in the polls, 19 points.
That's what I told you.
So is this a turn against that view by a majority of New Yorkers?
I think sometimes when you give...
Libby's frowning, by the way.
When you give a politician...
Shaking her head.
When you give a politician a chance to make a real difference, whether it's on the right, like Reagan... Or on the left, like Mayor Moonbeam, and out there, you know, Governor Moonbeam.
California.
They say, okay, give him his chance. Well, they liked what he did as Attorney General. They were furious with him. He let them down. He let them down as governor. But on the other hand, there is something compelling about a guy who will come in and shake things up.
Yes. And I think people actually down in New York like Elliot. Because of his personality, he is your consummate New Yorker. He will get in anybody's face, and he can make an argument. And, you know, there are plenty of people who have been hurt by what's gone on Wall Street. And so, you know, when he ran for mayor, or not mayor, when he ran for governor, and he was the, you know, mayor of Wall Street, and blah, 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 the Wall Street sheriff, it spoke to me, that's for sure.
Sure.
And Stringer is a nice guy, and he's very competent. But the personalities here are vastly different.
But he is of the establishment, you know.
Yes, because this is what he does.
Right.
Well, I remember when he was a district leader. I mean, he's worked his way up through New York City politics, and sort of had this expectation. Yes,
he's of them.
Yes,
he's a nice guy. He doesn't make waves.
No, he doesn't.
But interestingly,
Spitzer will.
Spitzer will. But interestingly, the black citizens of New York are wildly for Spitzer, and none of their leaders are. They're all part of the deal also. You know, the labor, so-and-so.
Everybody deserves a second chance.
Yeah. And the black population of New York knows what it's like to be taken advantage of and to have people pointing fingers at them. And so even though everybody, including his lieutenant governor, who I'm a little disappointed in, Patterson. I mean, he appointed him. Well, okay, Libby's making a face. Let everybody see that.
You know, I wish you could just tune in WAMC.org.
What, can they see me?
You can look at
right
and
here,
watch.
Yes,
watch. I know. Oh, is it
yes,
that?
Yes.
Now, usually she will nod when you speak, but will grimace when I speak. And so it was weird to see her grimace when you spoke.
Well, I am very disappointed in David for a whole host of reasons, you know. And
Patterson.
Yes, yeah. David Patterson.
It says here, guests, be advised that video of all live broadcasts in the studio
online. All right, thank you.
So don't do this.
What?
Nothing.
Don't do whatever he just did.
I just said, you're number one.
All right.
It's the roundtable on WAMC.
That Bronx cheer kind of way.
So, you know, let's go back to the mayor's race. Now, Wiener is, I guess, and I haven't seen the polls this week.
No, he's out.
Okay,
he's
so he's out.
Toast.
It seems
burnt
like a
toast.
Kind of a lukewarm feeling toward all of the field that is left. And so what do you make of this, and who's going to win?
Oh, boy.
I think it's anybody's game.
Yeah.
Really, I think it's going to go up and down and up and down. You know, one day it'll be one person, one day it'll be the next. De Blasio, Quinn, whoever the other guys are. And it'll all come down to
the runoff.
To the runoff, and that's where the money will get pumped in. So,
But it's interesting. You get a Giuliani, you know, who was Mr. Mean and all of that. Then you get, you know, the brilliant and technocratic mayor of New York, who's Republican, he's a Democrat, he's an independent.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Well, he was a Democrat first.
Yeah, well, he was, he's all over. But he's good. I'm a huge admirer of him.
So am I.
And again, he's a guy who tries to get things done. Okay, and then, and now you got a choice. Basically, should we go back to, you know, Tweedledee-ish and Tweedledum-ish, or should we elect de Blasio, who is the liberal choice in New York City right now, and say, give him a chance now? And so that's what I think may happen.
I think you might just be right.
Well, he asked the question,
yes,
who's going to win?
Did.
I'm trying to tell you.
No, I think he might be right. You might be right, simply because when I look at this race, and yes, Christine Quinn would be the first lesbian mayor of New York City. Not that she'd be the first lesbian mayor of a major city, because the woman in Houston has already taken that that mantle, that spot. But the problem is with Chris is that she's not getting the kind of massive support from the LGBT community
Why?
That one would have expected. Oh, I think part of it is for the more liberal part of the community, she sided too much with Bloomberg. Okay, for the rich gay male part of the community, she might not be more business oriented enough, or the fact that she's a woman. So, you know, it's really it's a strange dynamic. One would have thought that people would have come together in the community and really supported her, but the New York City community has been fractured in the past.
Gay
and
community.
The gay community is fractured, and it's very hard, just like the rest of the New York.
What's the level of prejudice, do you think? I mean, we don't really know until somebody gets into that voting booth and closes
right.
the curtain.
We know that there's been hate crimes more in the last few months than
there had
been in the past. And I just read that, you know, Chris Quinn and her spouse have gotten some death threats, that kind of stuff. You know, this could be what happened with Karen Burstein. Yeah, I like her. But when you go into the voting booth, you don't vote for the lesbian. You know, that's what could happen in New York City as well. I would hope that that wasn't the case, considering New York is such a liberal town and has been at the forefront of gay rights for so long. But I don't think people, she's not universally loved.
No, you don't. That's the thing.
She is not universally loved, and that's what you need. You know, she's not seen as the next Harvey Milk. She's just not.
To establishment, you think?
Yeah. To establishment, she's, you know, anybody who's gotten to where she's gotten has had to make some certain people angry, play the game, aligned herself where folks didn't think she should be aligning herself. And so she doesn't have that universal support. And it's a shame. But, you know, you look, I just saw this piece that LPAC, the Lesbian Political Action Committee, they haven't even maxed out on them. And their board members haven't given her money yet. So you just have to wonder.
Now, you think that they're waiting to see if she makes it through to the runoff? Before full support?
That might be the most cynical way of looking at it, but yes.
Okay.
Which is not really, if you're going to be there for a lesbian candidate, you're there for a lesbian candidate.
Okay. Well, listen, I've missed the break in all this.
How did you do that?
Well, because that's what I do.
It's, that's I've what been we off pay
for
you a week.
I've been on vacation for, I forgot what the, you have breaks.
We so are what, scintillating.
You are. And frankly, I've been drinking my coffee and listening and just sitting back and.
So what happens? Can we make it up?
Well, that's the beauty of this. I'm going to say about how to contact us.
Okay.
And then Jess is going to play the spot that I missed. And then we'll go to the news, right?
Okay, that's
and
great.
And then we'll come back. We'll talk a little more politics. And an interesting poll piece out of the Times Union today that kind of caught our attention about dates. And we'll talk about
who should pay.
Yeah. You can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. And we'll be back with the Roundtable after the news. Hello there. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Alan Shartok is here, commentator, activist, Libby Post as well. You can join the conversation at roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, I understand we have some listener mail.
Oh, yes.
This is a very important and cogent point.
I'm glad. I have to rev it up here. It says, okay, so here's some mail from somebody named Leslie.
Leslie.
Who says, Ray rocks!
Ray rocks.
Yeah, Ray rocks.
Simple, eloquent. I like it.
Alliterative.
And remember, if you'd like to say that as well, roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. So we've covered politics, so let's now cover some politics in the second portion of our program.
Oh, good.
Scott Brown.
Yes,
Scott. You remember
Brown.
Scott Brown from Indeed. Massachusetts, yes?
He ran. He became a United States Senator.
And then he stopped.
And then he lost.
And then he lost.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he lost. And now, obviously, and at the time, I said, yeah, come on, he's going to run for. And then he refused to run the next time. And then I said, he's going to run for governor.
Right. And then he joined a law firm.
And then he took Sarah Palin's place on Fox News.
Right. And so now, apparently, putting his toe back in the water, so to speak. Mm. And Politico says, Scott Brown's New Hampshire flirtation. It's by James Homan of Politico. Scott Brown is serious enough that he's making at least 5 trips to New Hampshire in a one-month window.
Whoa.
Including what? He made a speech to the county GOP luncheon in Hanover over the weekend and the New Hampshire Young Republicans convention. So there is some talk. Now, this is interesting.
Why?
Because he also went to the Iowa State Fair.
Yeah, and that's also another one of those presidential places.
Right.
Yes, it is.
But there is actually some talk among, though, according to this Politico piece, among senior Republicans in New Hampshire about getting him to move to New Hampshire and run against Jeanne Shaheen there.
Stop it. No? That's not going to happen. No, I thought you were going to say something really super profound.
Oh, whatever.
Which is if you go to Iowa and you go to New Hampshire, you're running for president.
Right.
No, but that's the point. He went to Iowa as well.
So he's going to run for president.
Maybe he'll run for governor of Iowa.
But he's not ruling out. He's not ruling out a senatorial run in New Hampshire.
What do you give me that look for? I'm telling you now, that ain't going to happen. However, and remember, New Hampshire is right next to Massachusetts. You know,
one could think
kissing that, cousins.
You know, well, that's the point. In fact, a lot of New Hampshire is in the Boston TV market, and they know him very well.
Write it down. It isn't going to happen. However,
all right.
The fact is, he can, and you can quote me on that.
Okay,
but the fact is that he is going to these presidential states, and he may be running for president. But he also may be running for vice president. And
right.
he is indicative of the fight that is going on in the Republican Party right now. As you listen to NPR this morning or you read the New York Times or whatever, you see that there's a whole block of Republicans who say, if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to die. And we're talking about John McCain here,
mm-hmm.
a presidential candidate. And John McCain is saying immigration.
He can't be possibly a candidate again.
No. But he's saying fighting in Arizona and making the point that you have to have a decent policy towards immigrants or you're going to lose the Hispanic vote forever, lose the women's vote forever, and all the rest. So there is this now this fight going on for the soul of the Republican Party. And Scott Brown is one of those guys who symbolically is on the left side of that fight.
Libby, before I talk about that.
Well,
Ray's going to talk.
Uh-oh. You know, the Republican Party is killing itself. And I even think John McCain, when he ran, did it holding his nose. Because deep down, we know that he isn't like the rabid right-wing part of that party.
Who are pulling all the strings.
Right.
And who come out, 10% come out and win a primary.
That's right. And so they're playing primary politics. They're destroying the party. I saw something the other day, Vince Priebus, or however you say his name, admitted that their platform was racist. You know, and they all joke around about this. The stuff that comes out about women, about people of color, the immigration issue, gays. I mean, you know, younger people are leaving the GOP. The radical Christian right, the youth within that segment of the community is saying, what's wrong with gay rights? We don't get this, you know, and are pushing that whole Christian voting bloc a little towards the center. We are a centrist country. I mean, that's the bottom line. We are a centrist country. We need to have people who recognize the validity and the vitality of everybody in this country without saying, you don't count, you don't count, you don't count. And the Republicans, you know, they can only count on one hand. So that means only 5% and five different kinds of people count.
Okay,
them.
But now Ray
and they're all white men.
And I understand Ray wanted to say something.
Interesting. Okay. Well, actually, I wanted to bolster what you both just said. Now, this gets back to Scott Brown and what we were on a moment ago.
Well, so much for that reactionary comment.
Yeah. No, that wasn't on air.
So,
oops.
What Scott Brown said as he headed to the Iowa State Fair was, quote, this is from the Huffington Post Politics, the way I see it, hey, there's plenty of room for people in the party like me and Sarah Palin and Rand Paul and Chris Christie, yet we're always attacking each other for not fitting some ideologically pure mold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not on the face of it, not an outrageous statement, but perhaps he is going to play that centrist role and someone who says, hey, listen, we've got to abandon some of these hardcore right things that are on our platform at this time. So, I mean, maybe this is the way he's positioning himself.
And there's an interesting story somewhere I saw this, maybe the New York Times, I'm not sure, saying that basically libertarianism is on its way. That you now have, you know, people should be allowed to have their separate lives, but there should be a fiscal policy, which is I'm not for it, but apparently there's this huge movement now, which is endorsing the Rand Paul and other folks who are taking that line. Fiscally conservative, our lives, leave us alone to do what we want.
Well, that's what the Tea Party ostensibly said that they were all about to begin with. Right. It was all about fiscal policy, but yet they were just the social conservatives in another garb. And so I think these folks.
You calling me a liar?
No.
I like that. Yes, call him a liar.
No, I was never.
I can go out and get a cup of coffee.
Okay, it's really about the same group of people just re-spinning and reframing the same old arguments.
Maybe I'm not so sure that because of the eloquence with which you spoke just a few seconds ago.
Thank you so
that
much.
That people don't understand that you can't alienate people for following their own moral guidelines and everything else. I think the fiscal thing, everybody understands that there's some truth to the idea that the United States should balance its budget. Otherwise, whatever you have in your 401k or whatever else is going to amount to nothing.
I have no problem with balancing the budget. I have a problem
what
with
is
balancing
a Coke cost
the
now?
Budget on the backs of poor people. And that's what they want to do. When you cut food stamps and you cut programs, and you know, what do they think? These kids are going to find food someplace else?
Yep.
You know, the free lunch programs go away. What are these kids going to do? The homeless are going to find a place to sleep someplace, not on these people's front lawns. I mean, we need to do something. And that's what government is about.
I hear you. I'm just sort of analyzing for myself, trying to make sense of what's going on in the Republican Party. And I think it's all about winning.
Yeah.
And they know it. And if you want to be stupid, you continue doing what you're doing.
Well, it's all about winning for both, for all sides. I mean, that's what politics is about.
Yeah, but right
about.
Now, well, yeah, well, Ray, I didn't mean to offend you in any way.
No,
but,
no, I'm just saying,
But think about this right now. The Democrats are doing well. They elected Obama twice, the Republican, and we know why. We know you add up the Hispanic voters, and they just deserted the Republican Party, whatever was there. You add up women voters, and they did the same thing. So I had no intention of excluding any party because I think the Democrats have got the message a lot better than the Republicans do right now.
All right, great spot to take a break. Jess, please take us away, and then we'll come back and talk about something a little lighter and more bizarre.
Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. Herzog's Design Center, Kingston Plaza, helping preserve interior air with eco-friendly Aura paints and 3,500 colors from Benjamin Moore. Also at Branches Miller Paints, Albany, Latham and Hudson Valley Paints, Fishkill. PoughkeepsieHerzogs.com. And the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, serving the public for over 30 years, nysba.org/lawyerreferral.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:47 on a Monday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It is Libby Post shaking her head. I haven't even started yet. And Alan Shartok as well. Nice to have you all with us this morning. Alan brought this.
I love it when Libby's here.
Yes.
Because she is terrific.
And I love it when I'm here, too.
Yeah.
Because well, I love being with you. Both.
Well, you should.
Good save.
Yeah.
Even Ray.
So Alan brought this to my attention this morning, and we'll throw it out there for you at home. The email address is roundtable@wmc.org. So, Christy Bartlett of the TU. Men should still pay when on a date. A professor from Chapman University in California studied responses from 17,000 men and women.
17,000? That's a lot.
Let me finish.
500 often is a poll.
Let me just finish the paragraph here. A professor from Chapman University in California studied responses from 17,000 men and women for a paper titled Who Pays for Dates? Following versus challenging conventional gendered norms. Among the findings, 84% of men, 58% of women say that men pay for most expenses even after dating for a while. 57% of women say they offer to help pay, but 39% say they hope men reject their offers to pay. Libby and Alan are carrying on a personal conversation. I've heard nothing of what I just said. Please discuss.
Okay, here we go. What did you say?
Honestly,
No, we know what he said.
Yes.
Yeah, you go first.
It's been a long, long, long time since a man paid for me on a date. But they did. I mean, I was 17,
sure.
18
and
years old.
And how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, there's a part of me that wants to think, no, that chivalry is not dead. There's something to be said for treating people well.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, we're in a time now where there should be some equality here.
Well, we know that's right.
There is equality here. And I don't have a problem with people sharing the expenses of their dates.
No.
You know, I mean, you look at the gay community. So what's going to happen there? You know?
Yeah. Well, the richer person.
Apparently,
right,
richer person Alan does have a problem with this because he brought it to my attention.
No,
so Alan,
I'm actually writing my column.
I've already written
my column on this.
All right, why don't you tell
us
how you feel?
For the Virtue Eagle for next Saturday. Uh-huh. Okay, so here is what I'm thinking. We all know that there is still remnants of a glass ceiling in this country.
Yes.
Not even remnants.
No, it's
substantial.
There.
We know that there's pay inequality in this state, in this country. We know that because Andrew Cuomo says there is, and he wanted a Women's Bill of Rights on those very issues. So we know, and we also know that sometimes, not always, but sometimes when a man goes out with a woman on a date and pays, there's an expectation of some return. And there are many women who don't want that, you know, who just say that that's not right. We also know that as young people take over, those young people almost inevitably do sharing in a way that people like me don't. On the other hand, I was trained, you know, mm-hmm. that even when I take colleagues out from the university and other people, I always pay.
Really?
Yeah, I always pay because I think it's the right thing.
You want
to
go out to lunch?
You're not the ones I would think of.
Oh, okay.
But if I take,
but I don't, do the Japanese food. Just saying.
I know, but you look a little like Mr. Miyoto.
Why don't we go? That's nice. That's really nice.
No, it's Mr. Miyata.
Mr. Miyata. Yeah, right. That's right. You do look a little like him. Anybody who's watching now could tell you that.
All right. Now, what? You know, Libby said when we were off mic, when she was not calling me a reactionary, she said this was a stupid topic. And so
it's not a stupid topic. Well, it tells you a lot about where men and women are in this country right now. That's why. And you don't think that the Times Union put it on their second page because it was a topic that nobody cared about. Indeed,
I'm not saying it's a stupid topic. I'm not saying that Christy Bartlett didn't do the right thing by doing this. You brought it to our attention.
I did.
Libby said it was
a
stupid topic.
Oh, Libby did.
Yeah, not you. I know that you thought it was great. You came running up to me instead of, hey, hello, how was the vacation? Look at this. Let's do this on the show. So go ahead.
I did it already.
That's all you got?
No, I said, I tried to posit it in both ways. I tried to say that I understand where we are going, the gender gap, and how important it is to get over that.
Yeah.
I talked about the fact that some men who pay think that there's a potential mm-hmm. return. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Remember when I said that?
Do you?
No, not at all.
Okay, all right.
Because I'm old.
I see.
And but I still have been trained by my mother and others. So you go out, and by the way, it's something like 58% say that on dates they expect that they should be allowed to pay and that they offer to pay, but that 34% of the women who said of the 58% said they hope the guy won't take their money.
That's right here. According
so these are still
Christie's
remnants
article.
Of the well, sure. of the old days.
You know, we're raised in this society, and it just is what it is that there's this expectation that men are going to pay for the dates. And yeah. You know, I think that there are more and more younger women who are saying, "No, we'll go Dutch, whatever you want to call it." Or pay themselves, or don't, you know, first of all, I have to say that the notion of a date with the younger cohort, they all go out in groups.
They do.
So it's really sort of hard to put your finger on that particular thing. But, you know, the feminist part of me is like,
sure,
it should be split down the middle.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to be put into this, into that kind of situation. There's another part of me that, not that I want the men to pay, but I want the men to treat the women with respect.
Uh-huh.
That's my issue.
And you think
here.
The paying is sort of respectful?
Maybe not, based on what you said, that there's an expectation of return.
Well, from Alan.
You know, no, I think
that's below you.
Yeah, I think that comes
Mr.
from a lot of guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, and not that I'm the expert in what men think these days, but...
You're pretty smart.
I am, but... Still, so I just want there to be this expectation of respect between young people, especially young people, and this whole notion of friends with benefits and what that means and what, you know, what it's like to be in middle school these days is a nightmare. And that's what percolates up. And so for my thinking, it's not about who pays.
Yeah,
it's about being respectful of the other person.
Well, okay. Yes, that's all very nice. But in the end. You know, you got to come down on with a position, and the question is, what do you think?
She already did. She thought the whole thing was stupid.
Yeah.
No, she did not think that the whole thing is stupid. She knows very well that these kind of cultural questions are reflective of our values and what's going on.
I finally got Libby to nod.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think it's stupid? Would you say it's stupid that this question of equality between men and women is discussed and manifested in certain ways in the society? That's why this is a very important story.
It's very important.
But the notion
that's
that,
condescending in itself.
Right. But the notion that who pays for the date is the bellwether for equality in our country is a little disturbing.
Libby. Well played.
It's one, but really, it's not the key. And, you know, this is a feature news story that is a little frivolous.
I see.
As far as I'm concerned.
You know, the interesting stat in this, and again, it is interesting, 76% of men report feeling guilty accepting women's money. That's a pretty high percentage.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, look, this whole business between men and women started when the men came out of the slime and walked up into the caves, you know, and started working all of this stuff out.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were stronger sometimes, and they were this and that, and there was a sense of protecting and and all of that. We can't take that out of our genetic, you know, even though we recognize philosophically and intellectually that we have to do better when we, in order to make men and women equal in our workforce and in every other way. So this is a very difficult issue, and I sort of resent.
Well, I'm glad you brought it to our attention now that you put it in those sociological terms.
You're so sensitive and delicate.
Yes, he. You
it's
know what
that
he is.
People
he
would
is.
Never ever expect.
He really is.
Yes,
that's great. If you would like to send your sensitive comments, please email us at roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org, or just Alan@wamc.org. If you think maybe he went over the line, you know.
What?
No, it's possible.
No.
Expecting return, taking women out. I mean, you know, that's
what you think. There aren't men who take women out who expect some return if they pay.
Oh, I think absolutely there are.
Thank you, Libby. Finally, back over to my side. Back over to my side.
All right, yes. I've had enough of this topic. All right, briefly, we got about a minute and a half. Another one I was not all that enthused about because I think we'll all be playing with sticks and stones and caves and mud huts in 10 years. Positive signs of housing recovery from the Times Union. Alan.
Well, if you have a house in Albany, for example, and it has been, you know, impossible to sell it, and then all of a sudden you see a housing recovery, you yell, huzzah.
Yeah, I'm happy. We're refinancing.
Yeah.
The more the value of the homes go up, the better our refinance will be. And so I look, in enhancing housing recovery, or, you know, having a housing recovery is positive signs for the economy. It's the bellwether, along with whether Airstream sells their and Winnebago sells their. It really is a bellwether for the economy. And so when the housing starts are up, when people are able to sell their homes, they can get out of this debt. It's a good thing for all of us.
Well, this was an interesting hour, and I appreciate you both
we
being
love
here.
You, Ray.
Libby
we
Post,
really do.
Commentator and activist, and WAMC's Alan Shartok, who is a commentator in his own right. And
Ray rocks.
We really appreciate you writing us to roundtable@wamc.org. What a fun hour. That's all the time we have. Thanks, everyone, for listening. But wait, there's another hour of the Roundtable, and then another one after that. Oh, good heavens, hang around.
Rock on, Ray.